Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. You know, in my lifetime, I have had many opportunities to have regrets, to feel like there's a lot of different ways I could have handled something. There's a lot of different things I could have said, actions I could have done, opportunities that I missed. I also have the kind of regrets that are just the opposite, the kind of regrets that make me wonder, like, what I was thinking when I said something, or what made me do something so foolish, or why did I lash out at somebody, or why didn't I lash out at somebody, or why wasn't I more forgiving, or wasn't, or sometimes even I have regrets about not being more resentful. So yesterday I mentioned an article that was sent to me, and I read it again, and I really don't want to read the whole thing because it's a terrible way to start the weekend, and not a good place to leave all of you in after you listen to the show. But I'm gonna read bits and pieces of it so that you get the gist of it, and then we're gonna talk about how, you know, sometimes tomorrow never gets here, and how sometimes the opportunity to make something right never appears. It doesn't have to mean like what it sounds. It doesn't have to mean that, you know, tomorrow you're waiting at the pearly gates. I don't necessarily mean that. I mean, that's one of the reasons, but it's not the only reason. Sometimes the perfect opportunity to make something right between yourself and someone else is right there, right in arm's reach, and we think, I'll do that later. Big mistake. Big mistake. And it's also a real recipe for regret. So I'm going to bring Shell in, and then I'm going to read a little bit of this article that was sent to me, just because it's just so, it reminds us how sometimes this moment, this day, this opportunity is it. So, good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Renee.
How you doing today, sweetie?
Doing good, doing good. Yeah, I'm curious as to what we're going to be discussing because, you know, I do have also, I've reevaluated things from my past, so I don't really have regrets. I have things that I recognize that now I would do different because I've grown as a person. So, you know, understanding that makes me, you know, so it puts me in a place of not being so hard on myself when at a time when I wasn't who I am yet now, I made different decisions that weren't as good or as sound or as reasonable as I would make now, because at that time I wasn't as seasoned enough, I wasn't as experienced. And because I made some of those choices 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago that I wouldn't make now, it's one of the reasons I am who I am now. You know, because I saw results that I didn't like. I saw people that maybe were hurt by what I did, or maybe I was hurt by decisions, you know, where I allowed people to do things to me that weren't good, you know. And I think if people don't dwell in those type of regrets, that they grow as a person and they become stronger and more self-confident, that they'll make better decisions. When you recognize that you made a mistake, when you recognize that you made an error in judgment, that's a good thing, because it means that hopefully it'll prevent you from making that same indiscretion at a later time, or that same bad decision at a later time. It's when people don't admit that they've made an error in judgment and they try to blame a bad situation on everybody around them, that these bad situations just constantly keep happening because they don't do anything proactively to alter their behavior in a way that would prevent bad things from continually happening.
You're talking about the perfect scenario. You're talking about learning from your mistakes, and that's, you know, that's adult. That shows good reasoning on your part. It shows that you are not punishing Shelley for making some kind of a faux pas with your words or with your actions. That's the adult way to look at it, for sure. And it shows that you've grown, and it shows that you've given a great deal of thought to those things. But what about the people that are not at that that recognition of themselves? Because there's a lot of us out there, a lot of us who are in our 50s who still don't even know who the hell we are. I mean, we meet people like that every day. We talk to people like that every day. Mm-hmm. But I think what hurts us the most is not, there's so many sayings out there, seizing the moment or taking responsibility for how your life plays itself out. All these different things are about using the opportunities that present themselves. And sometimes using a specific opportunity that presents itself doesn't work out well for you. It seems like it's going to. So you seize the moment, you do all the things that everybody talks about, and it still sucks. You know, it didn't come out the way you envisioned it. When you went fast forward in your own mind and you thought, okay, now if I do this, this is where I'm going to be sitting next week, and this is what's going to happen with this. For sure, that there's no guarantees for anything like that. But I'm talking about the more simple things. The simple things like saying you're sorry, saying it's okay, I forgive you, or it's okay, we're good. Those little things that have the ability to become big things in your psyche, in your personal way of handling things from then on. We've all been in a position where somebody's hurt our feelings, all of us. I mean, and that starts when you're really little. And we've talked so many times about forgiveness on the show, and you and I are both advocates of forgiveness. But sometimes it's really too hard. And you say you can say the words, but you can't have the feelings. You know what I mean? You can say, oh, no problem, I forgive you, it wasn't a big deal. But you walk away thinking, I don't believe you did that to me, right?
Uh-huh.
You've been there, right? You've been there. I've been there. We've all been there.
Yep.
However, sometimes at the end of the day, the end of the week, the end of the month, the end of the year, you've procrastinated that letting go or that speaking out, and you wake up one morning and you don't have another chance to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunity to do it is gone. And for some reason, I don't know, maybe because of Mike getting hurt, Big Mike being hurt when he was a kid, now going through all this stuff with Big Mike. We ended up with an ambulance here yesterday, took him to Wellington Regional. They gave him steroids. He couldn't breathe again. The doctor that's going to do the surgery is out of the country and won't be back until Tuesday, but I hope we've got him in a safe place right now for the next 4 days so that we can get him. He's not in the hospital. He's at home, but he's got a prescription for the steroids, and the steroids will, we hope, keep the swelling at a minimum. And it's not a fix, obviously, because you don't want to take steroids the rest of your life, because we all know what happens with that. But and then, of course, my husband, being so sick, you know, when you get a glimpse of not just your own mortality, but the people you love's mortality, you start thinking about some really strange things. You start thinking about what ifs and, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda, all of those kind of things come to your mind. And ironically, as what happens so many times, somebody sends me an article like this. So I'm gonna go through this a little bit, and I don't think I'll end up reading the whole thing, but I do want everybody to understand that if you can go out today and you can make amends with the lady that waits on you in 7-Eleven, I don't care who it is, you know what I mean? I just mean those things hurt you in the long run, and never being able to have an opportunity to make it right again is one of those things that stays with you forever. This is Newtown, Connecticut. I imagine our home. Oh, wait, sorry, I'm not starting at the beginning. Marion Wright Edelman is president of the Children's Defense Fund. Nelba Marquez Green is a licensed marriage and family therapist who has spent her life helping others. In December 2012, she was the coordinator of a youth and adolescent outpatient psychiatric clinic and a university instructor supervising 6 clinical interns. But nothing in her professional training could have prepared her for what she, her family, and community would experience after her beautiful 6-year-old daughter, Anna Grace, and 25 other children and teachers were murdered at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. I imagine our home was not that much different than many others. I was married to my high school sweetheart and the mother of 2 beautiful children. My husband Jimmy was working 15 minutes from our house as a professor at a local university. We were both happy to be back in Connecticut and so close to New York City. On December 13th, we went out to dinner to the Cheesecake Factory, which we never, ever, ever did during the week. After dinner, Jimmy took the kids home and I stayed at the mall to buy their Christmas gifts. And then everything changed. The next morning, Anna, our daughter, and Isaiah's sister was executed while hiding in the tiny bathroom of her first grade classroom. Her teachers, along with 4 other educators and 19 of her schoolmates, were also murdered. My son physically survived the massacre, but he was in the building at the time of the shooting. He heard the shots that took his sister's life. He remembers the screaming, the crying. He remembers his teacher's survival instructions, please be quiet and please be still. A reverse 911 call that Friday morning led to the beginning of a never-ending nightmare. We waited for hours in that firehouse, first believing she was missing, then understanding she was probably hurt, and then to accept the probability that she was dead. We'd both come from a large family and dreamed of having one of our own someday. And on that 14th day of December in 2012, after hours of waiting in a firehouse, those dreams were shattered in one sentence. The shooter killed 20 children. Now, Nelba and her family are the founders of the Anna Grace Project of Klingbird Family Centers, whose mission it is to promote love, connection, and community for every child and family. They aim to use research, practical tools, professional development, and public policy to identify the best ways to build those connections and then use them to prevent violence and promote recovery. She and her husband, Jimmy, say they believe love and community are the antidotes for violence and are dedicated to creating real solutions to the kind of violence that took their daughter's life. Spurred on by their faith and belief that it is always best to overcome evil with good. So the story goes on, and it doesn't get any less sad, but it is about recovery. And the last paragraph reads, I hope all of us will reach out to make our own community safer for children. As neighbors, members of a civic organization, sororities, fraternities, and faith communities, create connections for children, youth, and families in your communities who may be suffering silently with no support from family or friends. Make them feel a part of something bigger. Let them know you will be there for them. Remember words that have become the Marquise Green family motto, love wins. The work without ceasing for common sense gun safety measures to stop the scourge of violence in America. Now that particular comment I had mixed emotions about, but I understand why they're there, and I understand why that particular comment is incredibly important to them.
Now, which comment is that?
The one that says, love wins and work without ceasing for common sense gun safety measures to stop the scourge of violence in America. Because I think it starts way before that.
They're just talking about gun safety, so
right.
I mean, there may be other cases there, but I think too many people do get guns that aren't emotionally prepared for how to apply them properly. You know, they're getting guns for all the wrong reasons, and that's why you hear any tragedies. So gun safety, I don't think they're talking about banning people being able to get guns.
Oh,
I think
they're not.
Yeah, I think they're talking about heightened training and awareness that people that get guns should have a certain mindset about why they're getting it.
Well, and like I said, it's not that I don't go along with some kind of gun safety and gun control. It's not that. It's just that I don't. The gun was an instrument that day, and what was really wrong is what she wrote in the rest of the letter. And the reason I read that today is because, you know, now, you know, when you get to reflect about all the things you could have done and should have done, it's very difficult to move on with your life, Shelley. When really, in truth, I mean, do you know how many times my oldest son, who was only 14 years old at the time, said, I never should have took Mike bowling. Because the reason Mike got hit by the car was because they earned enough money fixing somebody's fence, and the oldest brother said, let's spend it going bowling. And they went bowling, and that's when Mike got hit by the car. So
right. And a lot of times when some tragedy happens, somebody else that was there that maybe suggested a course of action that put them in that place will blame themselves. And really, obviously, that had nothing to do with it. You know, it was a reckless driver. It had nothing to do with the bowling alley. He didn't slip on the lane and break his leg. You know, it had nothing to do, and that wouldn't even have been his fault either. I mean, accidents happen. But, yeah, that's something that we always do to ourselves. It's something called survivor guilt, that when you have two people involved in a situation and one, you know, kind of walks away unharmed and the other one is either harmed very, very dearly or actually loses their life, the other individual then goes through kind of a survivor's guilt because they were okay. And this other person, that's what happened to my best friend in New York. One of the things that kind of led her down a self-destructive path is that her best friend, when they were teenagers, was killed in a car accident. And she was in the car and decided she didn't want to continue going out with them anymore, made them drop her off early, and after they left, after dropping her off, they were in a car accident, and the one girl died, the one boy was crippled, and the other boy was badly injured but not crippled. So two out of the three that remained in the car had catastrophic things happen to them, and that was one of the things that led her down the path, self-destructive path. She was a straight-A student before that happened. This shows what regret does to us. She couldn't handle dying.
She
couldn't handle the boy that got crippled because she felt that maybe if she hadn't made him drop her off first, they wouldn't have gone the route they went. They wouldn't have ended up getting in this horrible car accident. And so she lived with that her whole life. And it was one of the most destructive regrets because it played out how, why she became a drug addict. I mean, this was always in the back of her mind. And there is counseling, and her, unfortunately, her parents weren't sensitive to counseling. It embarrassed them. So instead of allowing her to go through grief counseling, which is very effective, by the way, they stopped it. She went through one or two sessions, and they stopped it because their friends were finding out that she was in therapy and were making comments that embarrassed the parents, and they pulled her out of therapy. So what a tragic decision they made for the wrong reason, you know, because of what the neighbors will think type of thing, you know.
And so the whole thing that you just explained, though, is the proverbial snowball from you know, one incident, and you just mentioned, I don't know, a dozen, maybe more, of certain regrets because of decisions people made. Obviously, like you just said about Mike and Spike, it was an elderly lady who wasn't paying attention to what she was doing, and it didn't have anything to do with the bowling. Just like Sue, it didn't have anything to do with the fact that they dropped her off first. It didn't have anything to do with those things. Some of those things are just, it has nothing to do with you, absolutely nothing to do with you, and you still can be regretful because of the what-ifs and could-as, should-as. But what about the things that you can? What about every day when, I mean, I've had people say these things to me, every day when you spend time being angry or not talking to somebody that you love or being angry about something that you think was done to you, it's about letting go of it, because maybe tomorrow you won't have the chance to say, Shelley, it's okay. Yes, you hurt my feelings, but it's okay. I know you didn't mean it. I love you, and we're still friends. That is the kind of thing that we have to give some credence to, because tomorrow, let's say the obvious thing doesn't happen, that you know, you're upset with somebody and tomorrow they don't wake up. I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about the opportunity to be able to stop something before you don't any longer have the opportunity. Now, obviously, Sandy Hook was one of the most, horrific things that's happened in my lifetime, as far as I'm concerned. And all the shoulda, coulda, wouldas with that had to do with the treatment of the young man. All the people that had opportunities that could have stepped in, could have kept him in a place where he was safe and others were safe. Talk about regret. What about the people that counseled that child? Look at the interview with his own father. I mean, that's major regret. But I'm just, I don't expect people to take responsibility for every bad thing that happens in their life, but the little things are what add up to the big things. So being able to say, you did hurt my feelings. I am upset with you, but I don't want to be upset with you. I want to be able to forgive you and get past this and work on it together, especially if you love somebody.
Well, one of the things that impressed me about what you read a few minutes ago, and although it is a horribly tragic story, I mean, it just evokes so many extreme emotions of sadness and compassion and empathy and all those types of emotions to the highest degree that they can be felt when you hear stories like that. But one of the things that impressed me is very much your message, especially what happened to your grandson, Mike, is that they're advocating love and community moving forward in the most positive way. In other words, this is a horrible thing that happened. But if you remember, after any time there's a tragedy like this, there's such a furor of anger in the community all over the country. And you have people saying very horrible things, and they want violence to the boy's family, and they're blaming everybody around him. And That kind of anger doesn't do anything. You know, going out for vengeance keeps the injury open, keeps causing the wound to never heal. The only thing that can heal violence, the only thing that can heal war, basically, is peace. The only thing that can heal this type of a tragedy is for people to have a stronger sense of community and pull together, not to advocate violence and revenge and things like that, which are emotions that actually create this type of situation. You know,
absolutely.
I was impressed that they talked about this Anna Grace project where they're going to Love, Connection, and Community and to promote recovery. I think it's beautiful that they rose above such an intensely personal tragedy to try to make something come out of this, because they still have another child that has to grow up in this world. So their focus is on now making it the best possible world for that remaining child and other children that they possibly can. And what a strength of character for them to rally and realize that.
Well, and at the end of the day, the if you believe and you understand that what is waiting for us is much grander than anything we've ever done here, then that, you know, that alleviates a little bit of the pain. But the point is you're right. There's other, especially in a family scenario, there's other kids, there's other loved ones, there's other people that are still going the drudgery of day-to-day life and trying to fill that void of somebody being gone like that. But again, I don't want to just talk about the fact that missing an opportunity to make your life and somebody you care about's life better because they may die tomorrow. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. But sometimes you overlook the opportunity to make things right between you and somebody else until it just builds up a wall and then with no door. So the opportunity never comes again to reach out and say, look, I don't want to have this kind of relationship with you. I want to get past what happened between us and be okay again because I miss you. Or,
right. You
know, I don't want to spend the rest of my life with this brick wall between us. I don't want that. Yeah.
Right.
So this is one of the things. I mean, certainly the story that I read today is that the worst scenario, the worst case scenario. But the little things that happen every day, the little tiny things, an unkind word between husband and wife, an argument. I also was put in mind of the video from the Dr. Phil show, and I've run that through my head a million times trying to figure out what I would have said if I was that mom. And I think instead of trying to remain right, which I have a tendency to do too, I get that. I'm a control freak, and so was this woman. But I thought to myself, what would I do? I think I would have to say, I'd have to look at the child that I love and say, what do you want me to do? I'm supposed to be teaching you right from wrong, teaching you how to be a proper child, healthy, happy, organized young man, responsible and dedicated, grown up. That's my job. If I'm doing it the wrong way, then it doesn't benefit either one of us. But how many people can let go of all the things that they think they're supposed to do and go there? But I thought to myself, if I was in front of, and I've been there, the person that's driven me to drink as much as any of my children is my daughter. Because women, a daughter and a mother, have a lot of expectations in each other. And they're hard sometimes to, I don't know, accept or respect a lot of differences. And I know Shelley can relate to this, and most of the women I know can relate to this when they're talking about their relationship with their mother or the mother with their relationship with their daughter. So you have to be able to agree to disagree sometimes. But when I think about that conversation between the boy and his mother, I've run it through my mind, I can't tell you how many times, thinking to myself, if they came to me for help, what would I have said to them? And I think I would have said to the mom, you need to do what he said, shut up and listen, even if it's just for a few minutes. You really need to listen to what it is he's saying, because he's not okay. And if your ultimate goal is to make him okay, I think you need to recognize that and put it more into perspective instead of just being the one that lays down the rules. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah, of course. And that may be where his dysfunction is coming from. If he's constantly getting rules, and we don't know this, we're making a supposition here, but if he is, we're trying to look at a little, you know, few-minute snippet of something and make an analysis, but if, in fact, his anger, based on what we heard him say, is because he feels he's not being heard, he's just having rules barked at him and a very controlling atmosphere, and he doesn't feel like he's being heard, and that maybe things are unfair and he's frustrated, that may be the reason why he's lashing out, you know? I mean, my father was too severe of disciplinarian when my sister and I were kids. You could never talk to him about anything. He would make smack judgments, and he would hit without finding out if we were even doing something wrong. My father was a hitter. And one of the reasons I lost respect for him when I was about, like, 16, because of the violence. I mean, he would be too angry all the time, and he would never ask any questions. You know, we'd be doing something, and he didn't even realize my mother had asked us to do it. I mean, he'd just walk in a room and see us doing something that he didn't understand what we were doing, and instead of saying, what are you doing, you'd get smacked in the back of the head, you know. Get out of here. What are you doing? Bob, you know. And it was like that lack of communication built up such anger in me. One of the reasons, and it, you know very well, it took me decades to finally release that because it built up such resentment in me and a disrespect towards my father. Now, I would never have hit my father, but I certainly did become verbally disrespectful to him when I became an adult. And it was as a result. I mean, now I can look back on that, and I have a different relationship with my father. I've forgiven him. I still don't have fatherly respect for him, but I at least have compassion for my father now. And it took me many years to get there. I was very, very angry with him for decades, and it did color my interaction with other men that reminded me of my father, other bosses and stuff like that. That's why I was always very hard in the beginning in businesses. If I saw somebody that I saw as a bully, I had no tolerance for them because my father was a bully, quite bluntly, you know. So if that's where this kid's anger is coming from, because he feels he's not being heard, it's manifesting at a much younger age in him than it manifested in me. It didn't happen to me until I was 16, and I stopped being afraid of my father. But that's what happens. If you have a kid that's constantly being suppressed and they're fearful of a particular parent because they're over-controlled or they can't breathe, as soon as they lose that fear, then they go to the other extreme, which is being disrespectful and willful. And that's, although I was a good kid, I did get very disrespectful with my father once I got a little bit older because of this resentment I was harboring towards him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so the whole point, if we talk about the show that we're doing today, is the fact that now at this time in your life, I'm going to really put you on the spot here, Shell, do you have forgiveness for your father now?
Well, I forgave him years ago, and I've told you that I've actually seen him and spoken to him several times in the last year. I still have no desire to, like, go, you know, visit with him and hang out and go to dinner and stuff, but at least we have a dialogue. It was very healing to speak to him and hear that he was happy to hear from me and hear that softness in him. It didn't wipe away a lifetime of neglect and bad behavior on his part, for lack of a better way of putting it, but released any. I don't have those anger impulses anymore. In other words, when I was explaining to you a few minutes ago, I didn't feel any emotion, where a decade ago, if I had talked about my dad, the emotion would have welled up in me. I would have felt it. I feel no emotion. Now it's just something I remember from my childhood, but when I talk about my dad, I don't have that anger stirred up in me anymore. I'm way past that. And we do have if I wanted to call him or anything, I would feel comfortable to do it now. I don't have that holdback anymore. So it is healing. You know, my dad is elderly, and if something happened to him now, I would not have any regrets, because I did kind of get closure in that whole relationship. And getting closure doesn't mean you become best friends again or
right.
You heal at the point where you want to be with that person. What closure is that you've forgiven somebody and you've forgiven yourself for a particular situation so that you both can move on. And sometimes you just move on knowing that you've forgiven each other, but maybe you've moved into new places. It doesn't mean you have to get the relationship back together where you're seeing each other and talking all the time, but you've released each other so that you can go on and wherever your life is heading now, you know. So that's another thing that people need to understand. It doesn't mean that the whole relationship has to get started again, like with Charlie and I, you know. We reconciled after 25 years because he sought me out to apologize for something that was haunting him. He wasn't okay with how he treated me, and it took him 25 years to find me and apologize. All right, this is my ex-husband. Anybody who's new listening today, and we divorced, and after 25 years, he sought me out to apologize for being such a, you know, jerk near the end of our marriage. And again, you know, we spent about 6 months talking almost on a daily basis, and then we kind of got back into our own lives again. In other words, he apologized to me. It was a great, great healing process for me. It was good closure, but it didn't rekindle our relationship, but we are friends now. Where for 25 years, we were divorcees only and acrimonious days, because there was a lot of heated argument when we got divorced. It was not a good divorce. It was very hostile. So after 25 years, now we're friends again. And that's unique. You know, I consider myself very lucky to have experienced that. And it has allowed me now to let go of all those memories. So now when I talk about Charlie, there's no emotion there. So my dad and Charlie both gave me a gift by allowing us to have these conversations that healed situations that happened decades ago. So it's best not to let decades go by, but the bottom line is it's never too late. If there's somebody in your life, whether it happened a week ago, a month ago, or 10 years ago, and you still have that sense of anguish or hurt, or where it's diminishing the happiness you feel in life, you should try to approach them. And either if you feel you owe them an apology, apologize, you know, and at least get that healing process going on both sides.
Well, that's what I said in the very beginning. It doesn't necessarily have to make you besties again. It doesn't necessarily have to make you soulmates again. What it does, though, is it releases both of you from all those negative feelings. You don't you can agree to disagree, because we're not all meant to be in each other's lives. Sometimes we're just in each other's lives. We take a job. Let's say we take a job someplace and we meet somebody and it starts out being oh my God, this is the coolest person I ever met. I love this person, and you get all wrapped up in it. And then one day you come in and you find out that this person has been talking behind your back and your feelings are hurt. That's your first response. And then you hear more and more, and instead of clearing the air, you quit your job. because you are so hurt and so upset by somebody else's assessment of what's being said about you, and you never go over and say, you know, Mary, I'm hearing this through the grapevine. Is this true? And Mary looks at you and says, oh, good Lord, no. I don't know who would have said that to you. I didn't say that. And if somebody misunderstood that, I'm going to set it straight. And then you and Mary are okay. Or you go to Mary and Mary says, well, yeah, because I didn't like the way you handled this and I don't like the way you did that. And but, you know, it's about business. It's about our job. It's about this. It's about that. And you can move on because now you've cleared the air between you and Mary. You and Mary may never again feel like your besties. But now you're not harboring all this resentment and wondering why Mary turned against you. Or, you know, what's wrong? I hear this, too. You know, what's wrong with me? Why don't people stay close to me? What's wrong with me? Why don't people like me? Oh, I'm not like you. I can't just talk to anybody like you can. How many times have you heard people say that to you?
Yep.
You're like me.
Yep.
You talk to everybody. So how many times do people say to you, oh, I can't be like that? It's not,
yeah, I'm not like.
You know, it's not. Yeah, it's not easy for me to just walk up and just talk to somebody and make friends with somebody. You make friends with everybody. So here again, you know, all these little tiny opportunities, these little things that you may even forget in 2 weeks, 1 week, 6 months, I don't care what it is. But eventually they all pile up on you and you begin to believe that something's wrong with Renee. Because why else am I having so much difficulty getting past all these things and so many people go out of their way to hurt me? So then you get into this really, really bad place. And when you talk about mental illness, there are so many variables in mental illness. There are, you know, birth defects. There are disconnects. There are health issues. Shelley and I have talked so many shows about food allergies and all the different things you can bring on yourself where you cease to act mentally competent, and people start steering clear of you, and your life starts to change, and you don't know why. Sometimes it's a buildup of these little incidents and not ever being able to get past them. I once took care of a young woman at the Institute who hurt herself really badly at the Institute. And I felt totally responsible, even though it wasn't my fault. She was wearing horrible shoes on rough terrain. She hurt herself by falling down. I took her under my wing. I took her everywhere. I personally drove her here, drove her there, got permission to let her stay at the Institute much longer than what she had intended to because I was so worried about her. And the whole time, she, according to her, it wasn't the Institute's fault. This is what ingratiated me to her because I felt like she knew that she made a mistake, but I just couldn't deal with having her. She didn't have a family. She didn't have a husband. I couldn't deal with her not having somebody to help her. I spent 3 months helping this lady. When she left the Institute, she sued us for a huge amount of money.
Yep, I remember
and
that.
I was devastated because I, for one thing, I felt stupid, and that annoyed me. For another thing, I was hurt. I ended up writing her a letter so that I could get rid of those feelings. And I didn't, because there was a lawsuit going on now, there were certain things I couldn't say, but I wrote a letter nonetheless and said, you know, you have changed the way I'm going to treat people for the rest of my life. And that's a shame. And I said in the letter, I said, you know, I would step up to the plate for anybody, whether I knew them, whether I cared about them, whether they belonged to me, whether it was the first time I ever laid eyes on them. That's who I am as a person. and you've made me feel the last couple of months that I will never do that again. And I didn't want that. I want to be who I'm supposed to be. So when I wrote the letter, I told her. I said, I went above and beyond. And in truth, I didn't have to do any of the things I did. None of them.
Mm. That's right.
But when I sent the letter, I never got a response because I'm sure her lawyers told her to not, you know, correspond with me. But I felt better. And I wasn't hateful. I just said, you know, I said, I'm going to try to rise above this because I still want to be who I am. And I really can't let you change who I am because of your poor behavior. But it was one of those situations where I knew that I would be afraid to help somebody again.
Well, that's a really, really good point you just made. And we've actually discussed that a couple of times, that when you realize that the air needs to be cleared with another individual, and you approach them and you apologize or you try to reconcile in some way, the action of you letting go and putting out the right type of healing energy, you know, love, mm-hmm. connection, compassion, forgiveness, whatever, you know, you go through all these types of emotions, is healing for you. Now, if the other person doesn't accept it or shoots it down, you've already released it now. Now it's on them. And it's their responsibility now to fix their own heads and hearts. You can't make other people do the right things. You can only do the right things and try to inspire people, you know, to influence people to also do the right things. But once you've done that, it's already healing to you. I had a similar situation where somebody that I was becoming friends with, we were working together, and there was a falling out. And it shocked me because I didn't know where it was coming from. I tried to approach the individual. They would not speak with me. So I wrote them a letter, like you said. And in the letter, I apologized. I didn't go overboard with the apology because I felt her anger towards me was kind of unwarranted and like sort of out in left field. I didn't really understand where it was coming from. But I apologized nonetheless. And I even said that in the letter. I said, I'm not quite understanding why you're so upset about this situation, blah, blah, blah. But the letter made me feel good because I was compassionate in the letter. I kind of put the ball in her court. She accepted my apology but did not get back on track with us being friends. And it bothered me a little bit, but I had already released everything. And within a matter of a few weeks, it was like a non-issue for me. And we're, to this day, we're not friends anymore. But that act of writing the letter, apologizing, having her accept the apology, even though it didn't lead to us reconciling, released all that energy. It didn't keep eating me up because for months it was really, really bothering me, and it was getting worse and worse and worse, and I was getting more emotional the more I thought about it. And just that simple act of nipping it in the bud, releasing that, because that type of hurt feeling is very dense. It injures us over a period of time. And by me releasing it, within a few weeks, it became a non-issue. You know, so like you said, it doesn't mean that you're going to become besties again. It doesn't even mean the other person's going to accept your apology. But once you take that action and you take control of the only thing you can control, which is you and your emotions, it does create a healing effect on us. And then we can move on and not compound it with other people. If I allowed that hurt that she made me feel to keep eating me alive, it would impact how I interact with other people, because then you start treating other people. You start trying to get from other people what you didn't get from that person, and that's when we have problems, when we treat other people like they're the ones that hurt us because we can't deal with that individual. And, you know, we do it a lot of, it's called transference, and a lot of people do it without even knowing they're doing it. So it's really important to let go of these situations to prevent that type of unfairness in your dealings with people that are being good to you, so that you don't put pressure on them to try to have them heal you over a situation that had nothing to do with them.
Right. Well, and like you just said, though, it's all about, you know, if you're sick, your body's sick, your head aches, you got to throw up. I mean, you know, that's on the simplest terms. if you have swallowed too much crap from too many incidents, too many interactions, too many this, too many that, and you know that you're getting sick from all of it, throw up and get rid of all of it. And
right,
sometimes you can just do it, you know, sometimes you can do it privately too. But I think it's important for all of us to have good connections, to feel camaraderie, and have, well, how many times have we talked about you and I and the Golden Girls? I love those women.
Right.
You know, I'm not in their house every day. We see that now that we don't all work together, we see them every 2 weeks. But it's like no time goes by, and I think of them every day because I care about them. And we've all had differences because we're, you know, we're old broads who are pretty set in our way, and it's not like we agree about everything. But it still is what it is, you know. But the point is, because you think you should hang on to something, because somebody deserves that from you, because they've really upset you, they've really hurt you, and you feel like you shouldn't forgive them because that's what they deserve from you, who are you hurting?
Well, you're hurting yourself more than anybody else.
Absolutely, positively. There's no question. Because they go about their day, and I'm sure, like if I know somebody's upset with me, I worry about it. But it doesn't make me the same kind of sick as when I hang on to that kind of negativity and I don't know, it's never really hatred for me, but I can feel pretty mean about somebody. If somebody really does something I don't like, I can feel pretty mean. But it's not healthy. It's really, really, really not healthy. You know, it's so funny because whenever we're talking on the show, I get all these things. Joel Smith, who I've talked about before, he always posts such wonderful, meaningful posts. And he's got a big picture of a very young Martin Luther King that just came up on my Facebook page because I saw I had a message. So I flipped over to Facebook, and it says, I agree with Dante. The hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a period of moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. Martin Luther King. That's pretty meaningful, isn't it? And it even has meaning for what we're talking about today. I agree with Dante that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a period of moral crisis, maintain their neutrality.
Right. Because the whole cliche, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And people
Amen.
That sit back and just watch things going by and don't take a stand for what's right are actually part of the problem then.
That's the absolute truth. And in some cases, if you're talking about throngs of people, you're talking about the biggest issue. The single biggest issue is very rarely about what happened. It's about the repercussions.
Right. And where do you go from there to make the world a better place so that it doesn't happen again and get involved with people to raise awareness, you know? And then those are all worthwhile activities, but for the people that just sit back and, you know, like the armchair quarterbacks we talk about all the time, the people that sit back and just out hate and, you know, they don't offer anything constructive and they just sit back and criticize everybody that's out there trying to clean the mess up, and it's very destructive.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of my favorite sayings. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. That's one of my very favorite sayings because it is just right on, right
on. Yeah, it really is so true.
And if you, yes, it definitely is. And, you know, one of the other comments you have a tendency to hear a lot is, what can I do? It won't make any difference if I say anything. Or, nobody cares what I think. I'm not important.
Those are just excuses. Those
exactly.
are just excuses for somebody who is too emotionally lazy, and I don't mean to insult anybody, but that's what it is. It's emotional mm-hmm. laziness. You're not willing to put yourself out there. You know, it's better to be out there and stumble a little bit than never move off of point A, because mm-hmm. You'll get your balance. Who cares if you stumble in the beginning? Babies stumble, and then years later they're running marathons. So mm-hmm. Not knowing exactly how to get your footing, being a little off balance, is fine, because if you just keep at it, you'll get better and better and better, and you'll make better decisions and things like that. But saying things like, oh, I'm not good enough, I don't know enough, well, if you don't know enough, find out then. Research more. But to mm-hmm. not get involved and to use these things of excuses is strictly just emotional laziness, because they don't want to take the time to find out which side to take. But when you see right. things going on in the world that you don't like, get involved, educate yourself, and be proactive to change. What you and I are doing with this radio show is proactive. You know, mm-hmm. we have a forum here. We allow people to come on the show and talk. We offer solutions, and we talk things out, and we're always advocating, just like the Anne Grace Project we just talked about, that family that went through such a tragedy. And now they've got this project to create love, connection, and community, and to promote recovery over something that was so terrible. And they are part of the solution of their community and the whole country healing from that tragedy. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful thing they're doing. It spawned from something awful, but it's a beautiful thing that came out of it. And that's the point. You cannot heal the world if you stay in a state of resentment and anger and anguish and revenge and things like that. The only thing that ever heals us is love and compassion.
That's right. That's right. Well, and forgiveness, you know, I mean, it's, I don't
Absolutely.
Know. I often think to myself, you know, one of the things that we've said so many times, we have yet to meet anybody that's perfect. So forgiveness of most of us has to happen, because we're going to make other mistakes and we're going to do other things that are not good or not right or didn't work out well. It's just what's going to happen, because we don't have the ability to make all the right decisions. We don't have the wherewithal to always have everything we say or do be spot on. It's
right,
non-existent.
Right.
But not doing anything like what I just read is the biggest faux pas that you can commit, by not caring
right.
enough to do anything, and not caring enough to say you're sorry, or not caring enough to say, I don't know what I was thinking, or, you know, even being able to say to somebody, please don't do that to me again, because you have no idea how much that hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, somebody's going to look at you and say, I didn't even think you cared. You know,
right.
because a
right.
lot of times people don't even know that they've hurt you. They don't have a clue that they've offended you to the center of your being, because that's not what was intended. It was a off-the-wall comment or whatever happened. But the point is if you can say something about it and clear the air, then everything gets better. It just does and will. And there is no other answer to make it happen that quickly other than facing the issue and clearing the air.
Exactly, exactly.
So I want, you know, we're out of time, but I want to say that, of course, my heart, Shelley's heart, our hearts, and everybody, Sandy Hook was like just the most horrible thing I can even think of in my lifetime. And I have a lot of things stored in my head that were not very nice, but that was like the epitome of waste and just devastating harm to so many people. I mean, if you think about 25 people, you have to think of 75 people, because 25 people almost always affect at least two more people. So 75
right.
people's lives, and that's a very small number, because when you trickle downhill, it gets much larger. Their whole lives were affected by some bad decisions that could have been made many, many years ago.
All right.
So, again, pay attention. Be the kind of person that speaks up. Be the kind of person that asks for forgiveness, and be the kind of person that doesn't wait until you don't have the opportunity to make things right. So, you know, sometimes tomorrow doesn't come, and procrastinating until tomorrow never works in our favor. So everybody go out and have a great weekend. It's let's hope it doesn't pour down rain again all afternoon, but it probably will. We're having a birthday party at the Brewer household. This will be the last weekend in this house. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So we're Austin will be 17. My nephew Darren and little Frankie, great-grandchild, is 7. So big party. Everybody's going to swim and have a good time, and it will be our swan song for this huge, giant house that we've loved a lot. But we're moving on. So God bless everybody. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back Monday. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thanks, honey.
Right.
I'll talk to you later.
Hi, Renee, and I wish everybody love, connection, and community as well. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone.
Bye-bye.